Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Cindy, I've been waiting a long time to say this to you.
Hmm.
It's time to eat your vegetables.
I like them now.
Now, exactly.
Oh, man.
So tell everyone how much you love vegetables when you were a kid.
I didn't. Actually, I was definitely that child. I grew up in a very traditional home, and I guess. And I was definitely that kid still sitting in front of those peas at 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night while the rest of the family was watching TV or playing a game, and there's Cindy in there.
You weren't being obstinate, were you?
I hated peas. Oh, my gosh. No, I wasn't being obstinate. I just didn't like the way they tasted. But now I realize that it was because they were overcooked.
You didn't realize you had a gourmet palate when you were 7.
I did, apparently. I mean, I definitely just wanted things to taste good, so... Anything that didn't taste good, I was not eating it.
And on the line, we have a Mother Wolf calling in.
Oh, no. Mom.
Talk to you about your pee problem.
My mom was a very good cook, but, she also cooked the way that people cooked. And if she would make things like beets with boiled eggs in them, I wanted to run screaming out of the house. I can't stand boiled eggs. I still won't eat a boiled egg. You can make me eat a boiled egg. Thankfully, no one can make me eat a boiled egg anymore.
And I'm sure that
that's very Pennsylvania
eat boiled Dutch. Eggs.
That is just nasty. I can't stand the thought of that even now. But
wow, that's an extreme reaction to a hard-boiled egg.
Well, and you know what? There's so many things that obviously I love food, but there's still some things from childhood
not all food.
that sautéed liver with green peppers and onions on it. That's another thing that made me want to run screaming out of the house. I was talking to somebody about that the other day, and they were like, "Oh my gosh, I felt the same way when I was a kid." And it's just some of those really strong flavors
My
palate's just not ready for it.
My great-grandmother was great at cooking liver. That was the thing.
Well, I'm sure my mother was great at cooking it, too, but I just hated it. I couldn't stand the way it smelled. And, you know, for me, my sense of smell is so heightened. And, you know, I have a cold right now, and it's like I feel like I can't taste anything. I have to, you know, one of my cooks has to taste with me. One of my sous has to taste with me because, I mean, when you have a cold like this, it just ruins your palate. So it's kind of, I'm really so looking forward to feeling this go away so that I can have all these amazing senses
Let me take a minute and make it about me.
No. No.
No, what you're saying is that your nose is so sensitive.
When is it?
And your palate was
so
delicate.
I'm sorry, I missed something.
That you couldn't handle the liver,
uh-huh,
right?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying is that I'm attracted to the stinky of the cooking liver. And I'm crude enough to have loved the stuff since I was a kid.
I guess that is what I'm saying. I had no idea that's what I was saying. But
and all the fried onions
in
the pan.
The head, Tony.
Yeah, exactly. I knew it was about me.
Oh, no. Well, anyway.
Anyway.
But we thankfully, move past some of the things that were unfair or wrong. But, I mean, honestly, my growing up, we had to taste everything. There was you couldn't just say, oh, I don't want to eat that or that's terrible. You had to taste it at least to be sure that it was terrible or awful. And then you had to sit there and look at it for a long time. Thank God we had a dog.
Wow.
Schultz.
Wow. Secrets of Childhood with Cindy Wolf.
Okay. Well, it is called Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. So we had a dog.
So the wolf part fed the dog with her, her liver.
Yeah, I did. I fed the dog a lot. I mean, that dog ate really well. Her name was Schultz von Steen Wolf. My father named the dog. Uh-huh. She was a toy dachshund. Oh, my gosh. She was so cute, and I loved that dog so much.
Apparently had an excellent appetite.
That dog loved me. Yeah, I was little.
So
I was the youngest child in the family, a little tiny person. And that dog loved me.
Let's cut to the chase.
Okay. You want to talk about something else now?
No, I want to talk about the top five things you disliked the most in vegetables when you were a kid.
Oh.
What are the five vegetables you liked the least? Because the program is about...
Where do we begin?
We wanted to make a list of the 10 vegetables we love to cook the most.
Right.
You know, and sort that out.
Sure.
But let's start with, since we're through dark childhood moments...
Peppers, for sure.
Okay.
So, peas.
Peppers, English peas.
I hated broccoli. Lima beans were awful to me. And
childhood favorite for me, lima beans.
Vegetables.
The only
vegetable I would eat were green beans. So I hated everything else.
Wow.
Truly. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
That's really
what it was. I know. I think my mother still sort of sometimes has a low level of surprise that I'm a chef. But, you know, that's just how things can change.
And talk to her about that.
No, I was, anyway. How about you? What were your five least? favorite.
My father and my brother always joke about how much I hated broccoli, but I think I had broccoli one time as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And
only once?
Once, and I didn't like it. Well, I did a lot of the cooking for my brothers and I, and that wasn't my mother's bag. And my great-grandmother was a good cook, but she didn't cook broccoli. I had it at some point and didn't like it and made a fuss about not liking it. And so those guys just teased me about how much I hated it, so I figured I must have hated it.
Okay.
And then I had really good fresh broccoli, I don't know, in my late teens or something like that, and I really dug it.
Sure. It's a beautiful vegetable. Love broccoli.
But I think my father thinks I still don't like broccoli.
That's
funny. I think he thinks I still like Twizzlers, and I've always hated Twizzlers. I mean, I love my dad, but he's got those two backwards. I can't think of any other. Like okra, I liked okra. Nobody else liked okra.
Well, see, my parents didn't cook okra.
I like strong greens.
I never had that.
And nobody else liked strong greens or spicy greens, like mustard greens or.
We never had anything like that growing up.
Collards. Artichokes, I didn't particularly like. I didn't think they had much flavor, but they were always like they were always canned artichokes.
They probably came out of a can, right?
And the reality is, a lot of really good canned artichokes these days, like in oil and all, like they're a nice treat. But it's a different flavor. It's like you're eating a flower. You don't even realize it.
A lot, right? A lot of the things we ate as vegetables when we were kids were probably frozen. Maybe not a lot, but some of them would have been frozen. And then some of them would have been canned because that's how people cooked then. And then my mom always went to the market, to the farmer's stand. So, you know, when corn was in, and that was fresh. So corn, I loved. I thought that was like the greatest thing in the world. That's true. I forgot about corn and... You know, anything that actually I think she got from a farmer. I mean,
as long as it was corn and green beans.
I vaguely recall liking it. She wasn't getting any artichokes from the farmer.
No.
We weren't getting greens and things like that from farmers in Indiana. We were getting, you know, pretty basic stuff, but that was always good.
Yeah, I think the other thing, this will surprise you, is I really didn't like tomatoes. I'd never had tomatoes that had any flavor.
I hated tomatoes.
And then all of a sudden, one summer, my great-grandmother had got great tomatoes, funny-looking tomatoes, that she's like, oh, these are like the ones that, you know, we would have when I was a kid. I always liked these.
That's nice.
But she was Southern about it, so she sprinkled sugar
on
them, too.
I was just going to say that. That's the only time when I was
Salt and pepper and sugar.
There you go.
Like equal little sprinkle and all those things.
That's so funny. That's so Southern.
She put them between toast, like a fat slice of them.
Okay.
Between buttered toast. And sprinkle all that sort of business on them.
Oh, I would
and
definitely eat that.
Like chopped pickled cucumbers on them too, and a little pickled onion, and make a tomato sandwich. That was a big thing for Nanny.
That's cool. Yeah. When I lived in North Carolina, when I was little, the lady across the street. See, my mom never would have done this because she was from Pennsylvania. And the lady across the street, who was from Rocky Mount, North Carolina, where we lived, put sugar on the tomatoes. I can see it right now at the dinner table. I'm sitting there. I'm like, what is she doing to those tomatoes? And it had sugar on, and I think that was the first time I ever ate a tomato that I could stand. But now I would never.
Yeah, someone gave me recently sweetened iced tea, like real
from
a Southerner, and I thought my teeth were going to leap out of my head. Okay. To be formal about the top 10 list, we each made our own.
Let's be formal.
And would you like to read through yours, or would you like me to read through mine?
I think you should go first, Tony.
All right. Well, one, I have to tell you some of the things that didn't make the list that I love.
Okay.
Because I have that vegetable orientation sometimes. Broccoli rabe is definitely one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Nice, mature arugula or rocket is definitely another one. Parsnips are one. Carrots are close.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those, all those things really depend upon like the right moment only. And the things on my list are all things that like whenever they show up and they're good, I'm jazzed. So.
Mm-hmm.
It was really hard not to put an onion something, whether it's shallots or cipollinis or some kind of like sweet onion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of those things, the wadmalaw sweets or, you know.
Wadmalaw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so my proper list is asparagus, no surprise.
Right.
Fava beans.
Mm-hmm.
Tomatoes, but there's certain tomatoes, the ones I love the best, linguiças and San Marzanos, that have all that dense flesh that are great for sauce, great for preserving. And also make really, really meaty salads if you want to use them for that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or great, like simple, quick garnish on a on a steak or, you know, that's a for salsa, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. Several types of pumpkins, for sure. Huh. Probably the best one being those great big, like, yellow-green banana pumpkins.
I didn't even think about pumpkins.
Those things are sweet as can be.
Gotta love pumpkins. We're
a long way away from that time of the year.
I think that's why I didn't even think of it.
We're not in a time of the year when you want things spiced with the pumpkins, pumpkin-conducive spices, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, Jerusalem artichokes. God, are they a pain in the butt.
I love those things.
They're so good. Just like fried. Like they're the best little chips in the
definitely.
World.
Definitely. I agree. I could eat a bag of those things. So good.
If you go to the work to make a puree from that stuff, God bless you.
But it's really good. It's worth the effort.
It's like they sweet, are hard to but it's work not with. Gross. And
it's like trying to peel turmeric or ginger or whatever. I mean, they all kind of look alike and
yeah, peeling
act
it is
alike.
A pain in the backside. And then not expensive in any way, shape, or form. So you lose like 30% peeling them. And here's your tiny little bit of puree that you made that just cost you a car payment, you know. But I do love the things. Different kind of potatoes for sure. But especially, I mean, certain fingerlings mm-hmm. are just great. Mm-hmm. The Russian banana fingerlings, that kind of stuff. I love those. But also even just simple redskins, really mm-hmm. fresh redskins, especially the little guys. God, those are good.
You know,
just crushing them with the skins on and a little bit of really good butter and salt.
Yeah.
Put a piece of grilled fish on that, and that's you're done. That's amazing. Eggplants. And the eggplants that are like the round, that when you go to market and you see the eggplants in all the different shapes and colors, and it's not the neon guys. It's not necessarily the dark purple guys. Look for something that is the size of a big softball. That isn't the shape of essentially sort of like an egg growing on the ground, mm-hmm. But that has really, really prickly, you know, bit on there. When you get to the midsummer and those things show up in market, I love those things. And chickpeas. God, if I could ever get fresh chickpeas.
Love chickpeas. I should try to grow some.
Well, you're growing everything else. You're growing everything but tobacco on your damn farm.
Well, right now, not much of anything's growing on that farm.
Oh, my gosh.
Could we have some more rain, maybe? I mean, wow.
I think you're going to get your wish.
Cool weather, rain, yeah.
Last two items on my list, beets.
Yes.
Especially chiogos if you get them with greens.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, mm-hmm. because the greens on those are great. And if you can get fresh celery, that always seems like the holy grail every year. Right. Like you hope for the farmer that you can get the fresh celery from.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, our lists are very similar, interesting. And I'll talk about that celery for a second because the first time you brought me the fresh celery from market, I couldn't even believe how gorgeous it was.
The aroma, just the aroma.
Oh, my goodness. And I immediately made soup with it and served it as an amuse-bouche and or hors d'oeuvre, whatever you want to call it. And, I mean, just very simply sautéed a little bit of onion and shallot, not too much, and in butter, and sort of gently, didn't let it caramelize in any way, just let it sweat, a little salt and pepper. And added the celery, a lot of it, a little bit of light stock, barely cooked it, pureed it, strained it, added, I don't even think I added any cream to it at all. And it was just so pretty. It was delicious. I love celery when it's fresh like that. But I didn't have that on my list, but I had beets on. I'm just in love with beets, and that's another thing I wouldn't eat when I was a kid either.
You did not like
those. Oh, I hated beets when I met you, and that was definitely because of childhood, and she did used to cook the beets with the boiled eggs, and I mean, it's hard to get past that. So I love them, and all beets. I mean, it can be a simple red beet that you just have to roast them long enough. We roast them in their jackets on a bed of kosher salt we use a hotel pan, but in any kind of heavy pan with foil on it, and they steam themselves, and it does take a while. That like 325 degrees, it usually takes about an hour and a half, 2 hours, but depending on
the
size of the beet. But oh my goodness, they're so good, and I like to. We peel them, and then after they're done roasting, we peel them, and whether we're quartering them or slicing them, however we're working with them, we almost always immediately sort of toss them in a neutral oil. So corn oil, a little bit of salt, a little bit of sugar, and a little bit of pepper. And I could stand there and eat those things all day long. I just think beets are amazing.
You let them rest in that jacket first until they're like room temperature cool.
It takes a long time. And it's a process.
And then peel them.
You're right. And then that sort of becomes the foundation of salads, or if we're serving them with a warm vegetable plate or whatever. But they're kind of ready to go no matter what you do now, because they've been seasoned properly, and they definitely want something on them. They need salt for sure.
If you get spring garlic and you can make proper fresh aioli with that, and you have beets like that roasted, like chilled, sliced into spears, think about that and that fresh celery.
Oh, yeah. That would be good.
Cut into little spears is just the most simple crudité you could do.
I have to say also, I just am in love with carrots. We always have peeled carrots. You know, the way that we work, I have a prep person in the daytime. And he, when we bring in product, he'll peel our onions and our shallots and things. So they're just ready to go for the cooks, which is a nice step to have done. And so carrots, I buy young carrots with the tops on, obviously. And they are always in the walk-in, peeled in bucket of water. And I cannot help myself. Every single time I go on the walk-in, I think I eat a carrot. And also, I think I also have my mother saying in my head, you know, your eyesight will be better if you eat carrots.
It's good that you have positive food messaging from mom as well. When we come back on Farmer Wolf on Food and Wine, we'll get a little deeper into the veggie list and a number of recipes that go along with them. All of that and more on Farmer Wolf on Food and Wine on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, so we had just started your list.
Right. Started off with carrots and beets.
Your top 10 veggies you love to cook now.
Mm-hmm.
After the difficult veggie childhood.
And I didn't really talk, you know, with carrots, I think that sort of one of my favorite things is to make carrot puree or to make carrot soup. And a long time ago, there was a very good Indian restaurant in Charleston, South Carolina. I'm trying to think of what it was called, but I have a feeling it's not there anymore. I think it was called something Market Street. And I went in there one day and had lunch and had a soup that I'll never forget. And it was a carrot soup that had tomato and curry in it. And it just, it was something that, you know, the chef had made it. It was just something that I'd never tasted anything quite like that before. And I don't think I'd had that much curry in my life up to that. I was probably like 19 or 20 years old. And obviously, he was using an unbelievable curry mixture, something that he made himself. But there was a good balance between the acidity of the tomato and the sweetness, inherent sweetness of the carrot, and perfumed with that curry. And it was a pureed soup, and it was hot, and just absolutely gorgeous. And also, I think for me at that time in my life, it was when I was first cooking, it was an exercise in simplicity and realizing that, yeah, something like tomatoes and carrots can be mind-blowingly good. And to this day, I'm, you know, however many years later, I remember that I can taste that soup now.
A lot of times we stay most deeply struck by the simple food memories where the truth is really, really strong that comes through them.
The thing. That's why it's sort of hard to talk negatively about how you felt about vegetables as a child for me, because in the end, I love them so much now. And you know, I was a kid. You know, it was a different, totally different.
Yeah, you're talking negative about lime beans. Kind of hurt me to the bone.
All right, never mind. All right, so back to the list.
Look at amazing fresh lima beans. I love them so much.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Parsnips, I can't ignore. You talked about sunchokes or Jerusalem artichokes. Oh, my gosh. I love those things so much. And in my mind, I know they're not the same family necessarily, but or at all. But I love parsnips, and I kind of put those two things together in my brain. And parsnips are, you know, they look like a carrot, but they're pretty woody. They're sort of whitish, and, you know, their texture can be a little difficult to deal with. And so you want young ones and smaller ones, and we peel them and sort of cut them on a bias, which seems to be a good way to deal with them. And again, very simply, toss them in corn oil, sugar, salt, and pepper. What I was talking about with the beets, and we roast them. And I'll tell you what, if you caramelize, you allow those to caramelize. So let's say you roast them at 350 degrees in a convection oven for maybe even 10 minutes. Some of those on the edge of the pan where it's super hot, or in the corner of the oven where the heat concentrates, those ones will be a little bit caramelized. Oh boy. I mean, I can't walk by that sheet pan without grabbing one of those. I mean, They're so good. But, you know, we do a mixture of carrots and parsnips and celery hack in the fall for some of our bird or game dishes. And I just love the combination of those three vegetables together. So that's a really great way to go.
Well, they're a pretty sweet combination. And there's a more lightness than there is if they're super starchy.
Right. And then the other thing I'm absolutely in love with, and I can tell you I would never have eaten zucchini when I was a kid. And I don't think my mom probably cooked with it too much, but if she did, she would have cooked it really long, and it would have been really soft and sort of, you know, whatever. So, and I'm going to say again, my mother's a very good cook. This seems a little unfair. But anyway, I really love zucchini and squash, but I really prefer zucchini. And then the other wonderful effect of having zucchini is the blossom. Or squash blossom. And
zucchini flowers are awfully good.
Oh, my goodness. That is truly one of my favorite things to eat.
When they show up and you get the flowers to do them as a little tempura, to fry them really lightly.
I love them.
Or you can make a fresh pasta and just ribbon them. Like, you're not cooking them at all. You literally are taking a big pile of them and maybe a nice herb, whether it's basil or something like that. Mm-hmm. And chop them immediately, toss them into the pasta, toss the pasta with it, oil, and you just have a bowl full of flowers. You know, that's just an amazing,
beautiful thing. Well, and for a long time, I would only do the zucchini beignet. I didn't stuff them, and the blossom. And then at one point, I started doing ricotta and goat cheese and a little bit of Reggiano and salt and pepper and just a touch of lime. And stuffed them with that and did the tempura. Well, I do a beignet batter, very light beignet batter that is similar to tempura. And those are just one of the best things in the world. And it's nice because we have a local winemaker that produces quite a few blossoms, and his family can't eat them all. So I'll get bags of them from him and what you used to get them for us. But I'm so excited because I live very close to him now. It will be very easy for me to stop by and pick some up when he starts to produce those. But I think that's one of the most beautiful things you can eat, quite frankly, a blossom, a squash blossom or a zucchini blossom. And so the other thing I like about zucchini is when it is fresh out of the ground, I make zucchini carpaccio. And at one point, I had a cheese from Great Britain that was a sheep's milk piece that was absolutely perfect for this salad, and it's a little bit hard to find. So I would just suggest any sort of interesting pressed piece. It could be sheep's milk, it can be cow's milk, but something you can grate that is
really
pretty flavorful.
A pretty nice young pecorino would be.
That would be
a
very
good substitution.
So very thin, and I use an Asian mandoline, very thin, almost paper thin sliced zucchini all over the plate. And you can take the time to, you know, make pretty circles with it. As you build the plate, you want to dress each layer of the zucchini with kosher salt, freshly ground black pepper. I do I put fresh lime juice on, a very good, pretty floral extra virgin olive oil. I use something from the southwestern part of France for this dish. I have used Italian extra virgin olive oil for the dish as well, and cilantro leaves. So you have cilantro, fresh lime, a great extra virgin olive oil, some sort of great dry aged cheese that's been grated, and the salt and pepper. And just build it up, and it's a great starter plate. That's one of my favorite things to do. But I mean, you can do a million things with zucchini. I also make, when we get fresh zucchini, and I make zucchini soup, which started off that carpaccio plate, because I will finish the zucchini soup with a little bit of Reggiano, because I do like those two flavors. And I usually put acid in the soup, and I usually put extra virgin olive oil in the soup when I make it, and no cream. I don't even use stock, or if I do, it's a very light stock. But zucchini is definitely one of my favorite vegetables. I think, you know, you talked about potatoes. I love, again, we like a lot of the same things. I love fingerling potatoes. I think they're absolutely amazing. And again, there's so many things you can do with them, whether it's roasting them. And
I just think we deal with them a little bit differently sometimes.
Well, you and I cook very differently. We always have, and we always will. We you know, and I think, you know, having worked together as long as we have, that the way that you cook has influenced me, there's no question, because I did grow up in a family that believed in butter and cooked in an old-fashioned way. And I think also, you know, well, there's not also, there's no doubt in my mind that the trips to Europe, particularly to Italy and Spain, have greatly influenced my cooking, because I have an inherent love for French cooking. But being able to eat Italian and Spanish cooking, where it is about olive oil and it is about you know, very simple, clean, precise, fresh plate ups that really the whatever it is you're working with shines in such a simple but gorgeous way. I mean, that has greatly influenced
like
my cooking.
Like spaghetti with a zucchini flour.
Oh, yeah, 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 definitely. Or, you know, so, you know, I think that fingerling potatoes, there are, you know, so many different things you can do with those, whether it is a warm salad with truffle, which is one of my favorite things, and maybe a little bit of parsley oil and a little bit of celery microgreen on the plate and your freshly shaved black truffle. But of course, that's a very exotic dish. I mean, taking a very simple ingredient and really escalating it.
I took a couple of, recently when I had a little bit of morels and roasted them a small amount and made a warm vinaigrette with morels and dressed fingerlings that had just literally just boiled in very salted water. Hmm. And while they were still warm, mm-hmm. you know, just warmed the vinaigrette.
Oh, good.
And everything had been with the morels had cooled down in the oil and then made the vinaigrette
mm-hmm.
and then just warmed, just took the chill off of it, literally.
Perfect.
And,
so that's great.
And laid that with a little bit of, you know, morel rings as garnish mm-hmm. for the fingerlings. And that was all about the earth and spring, you know.
That's delightful.
Those potatoes coming
course,
up. And
I'm sure.
And the morels get almost like an inherently smoky flavor when you roast them. I always kind of liked that. And they can be a little bit crunchy. And
they would really if you put some bacon in there with them.
They would. They would.
You know, another sort of another way that I've dealt with fingerling potatoes is making a puree. And you know, when you do work with a potato that is that small, you cook them in their jackets in heavily salted water. Then you peel them. When you drain them, peel them, and I make fingerling potato puree with that, and I put a tremendous amount of high-fat butter in there. This is not
for essentially what is a really fantastic sauce.
Yeah, pretty much. You're right. A little bit of salt, freshly ground black pepper, and a little bit of cream, and I emulsify in the cold butter. We don't allow the butter to melt, and the fingerling potato puree is really beautiful, and several times over the years, I have done that with as an amuse-bouche for New Year's Eve to do a very special first taste of food, garnished with chive oil, fresh chive oil, and Ocetra caviar. And saying about the truffles and how that escalates something so simple as a potato, you know, this dish with the and a little creme fraiche on the dish as well. So fingerling potato puree, a little creme fraiche, a little caviar, a little chive somehow, whether it's chopped or an oil, or beurre blanc, which really sends it over the top because it's so rich, but the potato puree, and all you need is a bite. And it's just, and it really shows off the caviar. It's such a gorgeous thing. And then there, you know, again, many things you can do that are very cost effective with potatoes, obviously. And I think we talked about corn, and I have to say, I mean, I love corn. Corn is one of the most amazing ingredients. And again, you know, whether it's dried and in the form of polenta or cornmeal and used in all those ways, or fresh, and there is nothing better. I remember when we first...
What about grits, Chef?
I was going to say, well, and grits. Okay, yes, grits. That is my wheelhouse.
Southern Chef.
Big wheelhouse. Well, see, I make polenta all the time, too. But grits are amazing thing. And really, when they're stone ground and made from an heirloom variety corn that they were traditionally made from, ground fresh for you, there is really, that is some kind of good. I mean, that's just heartwarming. It's satisfying. And there are so many, you know, whether you make creamy grits or we make crispy grit cakes. So we take our creamy grits and we add breadcrumbs and a little Reggiano cheese and a little bit of fresh chives and form them into cakes and fry them. They're crispy on the outside. They're creamy on the inside. Almost like if you just barely put enough breadcrumb in there to hold them together, you end up with this soft center that's just a delightful thing to eat and can be the foil for many different things, whether it's a piece of grilled quail or fried egg or a piece of beef tenderloin or a piece of braised beef short rib or a grilled pork chop or whatever.
I will admit that I always like chicken with polenta,
the fried chicken.
Polenta or grits. No, any kind of chicken with good flavor. You know, that... Mm-hmm. Any kind of chicken with good flavor. For some reason, the chicken and corn connection for polenta grits is just a really happy one. The natural juice of the bird, too, is also
I've butter poached.
Spectacular.
I've confit chicken breast which is a little unusual, in butter before with salt and pepper and aromatics, and serve that over a crispy grit cake. That's some kind of good. We could talk about vegetables for a while. I don't think I've said 10 yet.
No, well, we've got a moment on our segment. What else is on your list? We have a chef challenge coming up next, so.
Excited about that. One thing I have to mention are collard greens, and this is something, as I have learned more about Southern food, and I never had them when I was a kid growing up in the South, again, because my mother is from Pennsylvania and didn't cook in a Southern way, but I didn't have them until I started cooking in South Carolina. And that's when I realized how amazing slow-cooked collard greens are, and then I started working on my own recipe and proper way of cooking them. And I mean, to me, slow cooking them in a smoked ham hock broth that's fortified with either chicken stock and or Tabasco. I mean, you have to have hot pepper sauce involved in your collard greens one way or the other, whether you put them on there as you're eating them or you cook it with a little bit of hot pepper sauce. But I do love collard greens and do like having them when they're very tender but not cooked into oblivion. That's the only thing that we're pretty careful about.
Yeah, I don't want them completely falling apart, but they need to be cooked pretty darn well.
Yeah, it does take...
Honestly, that's not the single easiest thing in the world to digest if you, Mm-hmm. If your collards are under, there's definitely a tree branch kind of thing going on.
Well, it's funny, we were recently in Chicago for the James Beard Awards, and I went to one of the parties, and it was the Southern Foodways Alliance party, and I walked into, it was actually at a clothing store, and I walked in, and my best friend from college and I were standing there, and I'm like, look at that sweatshirt, it says Potlicker on it. I had to buy it. I now own a sweatshirt that says Potlicker, which is the liquid, you know, that the collard greens, you know, that are, they're slow cooked in, and how important that liquid is to Southerners. You know, it's, You can't serve greens without the pot liquor.
Well, it's important enough now to be on your sweatshirt.
I can't believe I have a sweatshirt. That's the last thing I expected to get when I went to Chicago.
Well, when we come back on Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine, we'll have more talk of food-themed sweatshirts. And then finish out Cindy's list. Have her pick apart my list for a moment, and then we'll do a chef's challenge. Maybe vegetarian style. All of that and more on Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, so let's get your veggie list before we get into the chef's challenge. Let's get your veggie list finished up.
I can't not talk about, like, well, you mentioned fava beans. As I said, we have a lot of the same, and I love fava beans.
You don't always have to eat fava beans, by the way, Ooh. After cooking. You can eat them raw.
Raw, I know. That was
like
the coolest
peanuts.
Thing about being in Spain. Yeah, standing out on the edge of a vineyard, eating raw fava beans with salt on them. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, just like crunchy salt.
Like a little air.
Because you got to peel the pod, mm-hmm. and then you have to peel the inner shell.
Right, take the shell off, yeah.
And you have essentially something that's, when it's raw, is not completely unlike a peanut.
Really good.
But bigger than that. And you just kind of take your thumb and you dip it in the crunchy salt and crushed in there a little bit. And, mm-hmm. you know, then you have a little glass of something that goes along with that. Very pleasant snack.
We, when we cook fava beans, just blanching them off and quickly in boiling salted water, shock them, peel them, and then do what you want. Or you can peel them from raw if you want, but it's just a little bit easier for people to blanch them first and peel them that way. Just don't overcook them. You really blanch them for like 30 seconds, maybe 45 seconds, depending on how big they are, to get the skin to come off. And they're a lot of work, but they're completely worth it and just absolutely amazing. So, but that was, you know, I could talk about 10 other beans. So
well,
they
look like lima beans, but they don't taste, the texture-wise, it's totally different.
Yes.
Flavor is totally different. Lima beans are usually inherently sweet and kind of, and a little, I mean, to be technical about it, smushy.
Mm-hmm. That's very technical.
The fava beans are always like nutty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're nutty.
They're nutty
exactly.
And almost a little bitter, you know, so.
Right.
They do. They're great as a garnish for something that's a little bit like inherently sweet or has a stronger flavor, because they offset that nicely.
Yeah, so chef's challenge. There you go.
If you like, mm-hmm. Yeah, we can do that.
So it's a vegetable chef's challenge.
You want me to go first?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
We'll see what you got, Tony.
No. Okay.
There we go.
Well, I've got, handwriting is not as good as yours. That's what I've got. Carrots, beets, leeks, spinach, pearl onions, squash blossoms, parsnips, corn, fava beans, celery, artichoke, shallots, full pantry in an herb garden. Sounds like a lovely day. I'll begin by finding the wine I'm going to drink while I'm prepping all these vegetables. Maybe a nice, you know, 2014 Falanghina from Taberno or something like that.
Falanghina?
Yeah. Really, okay. Like a great veggie wine, you know. It's a good matchup. It's kind of a little fruity. It's not too sharp and acidic. It's from the Campania, from the hillsides. And yeah, super tasty. And can handle sort of odd flavors, earthy flavors and strong veggies. Although the only really difficult veg to match for wine that she gave me here is artichoke, and it'll be fine with that.
Is Viognier something that you think of with vegetables?
Not often.
Yeah. What do you eat with Viognier?
With Viognier, for me, I like really delicate fish.
Fish, okay.
Really delicate fish. There are some cheese that are terrific.
Okay.
There's also late harvest Viognier that is spectacular for certain fruit desserts. It's just amazing.
Okay.
So... immediately, I think of Condria and the guys in Condria telling me how Condria is amazing to have in the spring, and how you should have it with asparagus. Condria is made from Viognier.
Mm-hmm.
And Viognier has an aroma almost of like fruit cocktail and flowers. And I was just thinking about asparagus and fruit cocktail. And then I was thinking, oh, these guys are trying to sell me this wine. They're not trying to. No, thank you. All right, let's get into this list. Let's see. I think, well, to think about this, I'm thinking about, what, maybe two dishes to make out of these things? Something as a, because if you're making a vegetarian meal, you'll think about like a main course, and what is it? Beans and corn. You probably make a pretty nice little cake out of fava beans and corn. I started with some of those pearl onions. And if you had a little dried chili around, that might be a fun thing to do, is set it up almost like a, I don't know, just like you would see a slice of fried green tomato or something. But you need to cook both the corn off and the fava beans off, and sweat the pearl onions, get them nice and sweet, give them a little bit of vinegar, and then work them all together and essentially mash them together to make a cake to serve as main course, or as sort of the center plate of a main course. For that, it's funny, the carrots, the beets, and the leeks, you had them listed all together immediately, and it makes me want to have all of those things in the same dish, you know?
Yeah.
That's, and they also all offset each other flavor-wise and texture-wise. I mean, I would just, those are things I'd want to tourner and blanch, the carrots and the beets, and the leeks, just get little spears out of those guys, and just sweat the leeks a tiny amount and get everything hot. Maybe this is a vegetarian meal for you, so maybe we get those vegetables hot in butter. and they end up being a nice garnish for that corn and fava bean cake. I have to go to the herb garden looking for a warm vinaigrette or some kind of a sauce. You could probably do a beurre blanc with fresh thyme, might be nice with that.
Did you just say beurre blanc?
I did. I'm cooking for a target market over here.
Okay.
Trying to sell vegetarian dishes to Chef Wolf. So let's see. The squash blossoms I really want to have as a first something, whether it's just fried as a snack or stuffed. I would love to stuff them with the artichoke, though.
I like that.
Make a forcemeat out of the artichoke bottoms.
That sounds good.
With some Parmigiano and stuff the squash blossoms.
Oh, yeah.
And sort
Never
of
had
do,
that.
Do it old-fashioned. Do like an egg batter, pan fry them.
Okay.
That'd be pretty fun. That'd be pretty fun first dish. You have spinach left to make a salad with, shallots to play with, fresh celery.
So you actually have several courses here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, when you said two dishes, I'm like, wow, that's a lot of product.
Obviously, well, thinking out loud.
Yeah, it makes sense what you're doing now.
Lots of vegetable dishes.
Sure.
I mean, that's the fun thing. Well, you know me. I'll show up with umpteen things from umpteen farmers and...
Mm-hmm.
Want to put all these vegetable dishes on menu, so
it's a good thing.
Yeah, I think so. Artichokes love basil. That'd be great to do a little aioli with fresh basil for the artichokes as a sauce. What else? A little more falanghina. Think about the celery. You could do braised celery as a dish with fried shallots as a garnish. It'd be kind of fun. The thing is that, what are you going to braise the celery in? I wish I had mushrooms around to make
it. I was going to say, and it sounds like it needs, honestly, I'm like, wow, braised celery. Maybe it needs a piece of fish. That sounds, which you don't have on your list. It's all vegetables.
No, it doesn't have. The I mean, I've had braised celery and
so if you had mushrooms,
fresh cream was amazing.
Oh, well, I'm sure. You know, if you have mushrooms, what would you do then?
I'd roast the mushrooms, put them in the cream, and braise the celery in that.
Okay, sounds good.
And some shallots. I mean, that's.
I could eat that right now.
That's a remarkable thing for, if you have something a tougher piece of meat that you slice thin, mm-hmm. you know, from a like a beef sirloin or something that, or on its own as a side dish for. The vegetarian meal. But Cindy's vegetarian meal, so there's plenty of butter. So I think I've used everything on here pretty much.
Okay.
All right. So, all right, you get...
What weirdness do you have on your page here, Tony?
Besides the handwriting? No.
Yeah, really?
There are no hot dogs on
all
there.
All right. Asparagus, mint, chives, lentils. Yes. Yellow beets, shiitake mushrooms, dried orquiette, Fresno chilies, shallots. Blue potatoes. Wow, I haven't worked with those in a long time. I love blue potatoes.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Cumin. And then, so I have a regular pantry and baking product. And I have, does this say dried tomatoes?
Yep, tomatoes you dried last year.
Okay. And
put up in
oil. I don't know what this, something.
And pickled jardiniera. The little pickled vegetables.
Yeah.
Again, put up from last year.
Okay, that's great. I just couldn't read it.
Those are just things like if I'm doing veggie anything, I'm desperate to have in my pantry, and we usually do, so.
Well, obviously, I'm making pasta. So I'm going to make two dishes, probably two. Let's see. Well, you didn't. In the end, you made more, but.
No one complains about more fun dishes.
I definitely want to do something with it. No, not at all. I definitely want to do something with the lentils. And actually, lentils and yellow beets sounds really good to me. And actually, that's going to become a salad with the Fresno chilies. Well, I want to think about this. And I have potatoes. Okay.
That's the thing, cooking these things, and you have to really think about.
Mm-hmm. Blue potatoes.
It's cool. It's very stimulating.
Boiling them in the jackets, heavily salted water. Right at the end, I'm going to drain them and put them back in the little pot with a lid on it, but I'm going to salt them super heavily and let them steam themselves. And they're going to sit there for a minute. And I'm going to cook the... lentils very simply in salted water with your cumin that you gave me, salt, pepper, and actually some of the Fresno chilies in the water. So once the lentils, which are wonderful because they cook so quickly out of all the beans, dried beans, obviously you have to really wash your lentils very well first in cold water, rinse them, let them roll around in a bowl to clean them up really well, and then drain them, and then go ahead and cook them. With that cumin and the Fresno chilies, excuse me. And so once the lentils are done, I'm going to drain them and toss them with a little bit more of the cumin and the chilies and a little bit of extra virgin olive oil and those dried tomatoes. Well, actually, the dried tomatoes will have oil in them. So I'll actually add that to the lentils. And then I'm going to, by this time those blue potatoes are ready to go, I'm going to take them out of that pot and I'm going to quarter them. I'm going to lay them around the edge of the dish and I will remove the skin. So the quartered, warm blue potatoes around the edge of, actually like the edge of a bowl, and then put the lentils that have been already seasoned really beautifully in the center. And you have that tomato flavor going on there too, so that's going to be really delicious.
Did you still hang on to the golden beets?
What? Oh, beets. And I've roasted, I'm going to roast those beets. And I'm going to put the beets on there. Forget the beets. That dish is great the way it is. And actually, I'm going to take those shiitake mushrooms. I'm going to saute those in a very hot, I'm going to slice them very thin. I haven't used shiitake mushrooms in a long time. You have to take the stem off of the shiitakes. You have to cut it off. It's completely inedible. And then very finely slice the shiitake, put them in a super hot pan with a neutral oil like corn oil, and work them until they're caramelized. And then that will be the garnish for that sort of warm lentil salad with the potatoes. And then what am I left with? So I have asparagus, mint, chives, beets, the pasta, shallots. Asparagus, yeah.
Those are pasta.
Yeah, that is the pasta. So the orecchiette, which I love because it holds sauce so beautifully. So the orecchiette, you know, obviously boil that off, drain it well. It is a sort of starchy pasta. So I think it's going to need some good extra virgin olive oil. The asparagus, I'll probably just cut, say, one long spear into two pieces on a bias cut. So it'll be blanched, cut into three long pieces. I'll toss it with the pasta, add just a little bit of chiffonade of mint and chives, and it says regular pantry and baking. So I would like to add...
Sometimes I'm going to break it on you. Mm-hmm. Sometimes for beets with orecchiette, mm-hmm. I'll use a melon baller to get the little rounds because they'll sit in the little cups.
Oh, yeah, that's cute. And toss it, I don't know if I said extra virgin olive oil, and then obviously salt and pepper, and then the beets, because they're little... yellow beets, hopefully. They will have been roasted in the sea salt bed in the oven, and then I'll probably quarter those, and they will just garnish the dish with, again, a little salt and pepper on those, and I think that's it. I think, yeah.
Sounds good.
The only thing I didn't use was the pickled vegetables, but they're just going
to... But they're up on the shelf.
They don't have to be used. Exactly. All right.
When you're not cooking for your vegetarian friends, you can pull it out for some prosciutto or something.
There you go. Yeah. Sounds good.
So, anything we learned about vegetables that we exercise any demons of vegetables past?
I don't know, but I just love vegetables, so I think that's the beautiful thing.
I feel guilty about not mentioning some of the things, like all the vegetables that I love.
Mm-hmm.
But also just not easy to get to everything, you know.
Oh sure.
You mentioned celery hearts. And those things.
I love celeryac. Celeryac is a great vegetable. What else did we miss? Because we talked about top 10.
Too many things, and we're out of time on it. But thanks for listening to Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Jeff Cindy Wolf.
If you want to download this program or any other previous podcast, you can go to the WYPR website, wypr.org, and look up the Formula Wolf page. If you want to send us emails, it's foremanwolf@wypr.org with questions, comments, recipes, requests. We're happy to assist. And if you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
on Twitter you can follow me as Chef Cindy Wolf, or on Instagram, Chef Wolf.
Thanks so much for listening,
and have a great Sunday.